extending apology, Honorable Chair, as one of our still on leave.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sure the meeting also will note and register the apology of our Honorable Chair, who's not yet well as yet. With that, I would like to welcome Honorable Rosina Kombane, the new member from the EFF, representing the EFF. And Honorable Salista, she's going to be the alternate. You are most welcome, Honorable Member. Looking forward to working with you in this committee to make the department account.
Chair, we cannot hear you. Chair, we cannot hear you.
What's that? Oh, hello?
Oh, yes, we can hear you and see you now.
Okay, of course. Thank you very much. Just a few points, just to recap our memory as members of this committee. That today we are, I'm sure all of us, we are excited that at last we will be also engaging with the agencies that matters most. I understand that we are represented by advocate, advocate Rory Bowler. I hope I pronounce your surname correctly, sir. You will forgive me. By the end of this meeting, I'll be very much accurate in terms of pronouncing your surname. But also welcoming the minister, the deputy minister and head delegation. But most importantly, the reason why we're gathered here, just to recap members, is that in fulfilling our responsibilities of doing oversight, but also one of our priorities also within this new administration to ensure that we also deal with the tendencies of corruption as they raise their heads, but also to ensure that public servants are all compliant with all the laws that govern the public safety, such as Section 8 of Public Service Administration Management Act of 2014, which criminalizes the conducting of business with the state by the public administration employees and advisors. So for operationalization of this act, there is a regulation, 13C of the Public Service Regulation of 2016, that ensures that it doesn't happen. But we are aware, notwithstanding that act and the regulation, still we will also see when we receive the presentation from Public Service Administration that there are so many rats. That means that there are still public servants that still do business with the state, as it were. But also today is not only to be shocked or to be surprised, but to assist the department and the agencies to say how best can we then identify the gaps and make suggestions, mitigating suggestions, to ensure that at least by the end of our term, half of these tendencies which have been eradicated, if not completely, but also identifying the process of our engagement, whether do we think that we should also invite those, I would call them serial offenders of that way, and see even the departments or provinces if need arises, but the meeting will make its determination on that one. With those notes, we welcome all of us. The meeting is officially opened, and then I will request, in terms of our agenda, probably allow the Deputy Minister first to do the over helicopter overview of what to expect, and then we'll follow the agenda as indicated, Honorable Members. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable DM Chikunga.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Let me first start by extending our apology the minister's apology, the DG's apology, and even myself. We are held up in an urgent meeting where we are dealing with issues related to labor and other issues that have cropped up that require our urgent attention. However, we have ensured that we have a delegation that is led by SDG Siva, and Dr. Solomon will make the presentation. They will share the work, and they have the authority and responsibility to respond to questions asked. For those questions that they may feel that probably they don't have answers to, they will bring them to our attention and we'll be able to respond even in writing. I'm therefore sending that apology from all of us. But also maybe to indicate, Chairperson, that we are in a month that signifies renewal, that signifies growth and progress, which is September, but also a month that we regard, in fact, is declared as a public service month. And during this month, we will have quite a number of activities to celebrate our public servants, but also to look at our successes and failures or gaps and find ways of closing up those gaps, but also find ways of informing the public of South Africa about those areas where we believe that we've done well as a public service. I want to believe that all of us can appreciate the fact that during this pandemic that we still have in South Africa and the world, our public servants managed to rise to the occasion, and they managed to lead by example and to save a number of lives, even if, yes, we lost some lives, and even amongst our public servants, but we think they did manage to keep South Africa moving. And I think this is the month where we will be celebrating that. The launch will be communicated to the portfolio committee. It was supposed to be yesterday. However, due to unforeseen circumstances, it had to be postponed, and we'll communicate the new date to the portfolio committee. The presentations that we're going to have today will actually provide an update on the progress made regarding the implementation of Regulation 13C of the Public Service Regulation 2016 and Section 8 of the Public Administration Management Act of 2014, which provide for public servants conducting business with the state and criminalizing such action. And as they will actually inform the Portfolio Committee, as at April 2020, we had up to 1,513 public service or employees who were started as conducting business with the state. Of those, 1,111 are from the provincial department and 428 are from the national department. And there was a figure that was beamed into the media, which was to say it's 1,544, it's 1,539. And we have been engaged in trying to deal with this matter, which is both a misconduct that requires disciplinary action if it is proven to be true, but also it's a criminal act that requires law enforcement intervention so that this matter can be put to rest. And there have been quite a number of engagements, first between the minister, our minister, and other ministers, and I think that will be covered in the presentation, because we've done quite a lot in trying to deal with this matter, but also in trying to sensitize departments to report to us on time, but also to deal with the issues and to deal with those public servants and confirm if it is correct information. And the presentation will tell us as to whether we are receiving some joy or there is some improvement, but we are committed as the leadership in the department to deal with this matter and put it to rest. Our belief is that if we can set an example and have some of the public servants that are indeed engaging in this criminal act taken to court and actually be punished for that, that will send a message to others to say they can't continue doing it. Chairperson, with just this opening overview remarks, I will hand over to Acting DDG Jiva to take us through the presentation. He will allow Dr. Solomon, or he will decide as to whether it's him or Dr. Solomon who's going to presentation, and they will take questions and respond to them. Where they are not able, like I've indicated, they will bring them to us so that we can respond in writing. I will be leaving Chairperson the meeting now, because the meeting that I referred to is already taking place. And we apologize sincerely for that. And it's not like we're not taking the portfolio committee serious. Indeed, we do. We have just an emergency to deal with. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. I must say that we really appreciate that we did have a distance of waiting in such meetings to introduce your delegation. And we have been enjoying throughout your presence as the minister. And we understand that we must also have a stable public service. With that, I will suggest that we move to Dr. Jiva. Over to you, ma'am.
Honourable Chair, this is Solomon Hoogenraad's remark.
My apologies.
No, that's fine, Honourable Chair. Do you see my presentation?
Yes, we do. I'm sure other honourable members do as well.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll just put it on presentation mode. Honourable Chair, people, members of the Honourable House, good morning. My presentation will be just the purpose of today's meeting, a background, the measures that we've put in place, the status as at April 2020, and the current state. So the purpose for the Portfolio Committee is, like my Deputy Minister said, to take note of the progress on the implementation of Regulation 13C of the Public Service Regulation, which prohibits public service employees from conducting business with their organ of state, and then Section 8 of the Public Administration Management Act that expanded on the Regulation 13C, which now criminalizes the conducting of business with the state for public administration employees and for special advisors. Now, as background, in September 2019, the DPSA presented to this committee the following statistics. In February 2019, we found that there was 1,068 public service employees conducting business with the state, 798 in provincial departments, and 270 from national departments. So at the end of April 2020, we found that 1,534 public service employees were conducting business with the state, as the Deputy Minister said, 1111 in provincial departments and 428 from national departments. Now, initially, the figure was 1544. But this month, we received confirmation from a department that four of their members were actually appointed in an official capacity to represent the department. And that's why we lowered the figure to 1539. But this is still an increase of 471. Now, the measures that we've put in place, as the Deputy Minister said, we have Public Service Regulation 2016. And then also Section 8 of the Public Administration Management Act that came into effect last year, the 1st of April. Now, this you will see here at 3A, it is an offence, and any person found guilty of the offence is liable to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or both such fine and imprisonment, and it constitutes serious misconduct, which may result in the termination of employment by the employer. Now, to assist with the implementation of these two regulations, the Minister for Public Service Administration approved two directives, which the first one was the directive on other remunerative work outside the employee's employment. Now, this was introduced to have a standardized process for public service employees when they apply for other remunerative work, so that we can make sure that people do not apply for work that is actually illegal, which is then conducting business with the state. Now, the second directive that we approved cell system, which is the personnel salary system. And then when we obtain a match, we know that person on the database, on the CSD, is a public servant. And then we require proof from the department to indicate that that person is still in employment, and also then giving that information to National Treasury so that they cannot then registrate the person if the person is a public servant. So this database contains all the names of the individuals and companies wishing to obtain government contracts. Now, we also amended the parcel system to capture the other remunerative work approval process so that we can monitor monthly and see that there's no employees that's performing other remunerative work and then parading it as other remunerative work, but in fact it's conducting business with the state. And we also were then able to compare that information on the our internal PASOL system database then with the financial disclosure system, which we gave access to ethics officers, and then they could see also which of those employees are then actually conducting business with the state. Now, the DPSA continuously identifies employees possibly conducting business with the state, and possibly because we have a match on the CSD, but it may be that people already resigned, people may be wrongly captured, there may be some false flag, and that is the responsibility of departments to notify us on, so that we then can have a list of those that's definitely conducting business with the state, which we were not able to do up to now. So in 2017, the DPSA wrote letters to the executive authorities identifying those individuals on the CSD, and we asked them to act against the officials in line with the transitional measures at that stage under the public service regulations, and also to create awareness on the regulation. We communicated the circular in June 2017 to urge action, and progress report was presented to Cabinet in November 2017. So in 2018, we wrote further letters to the executive authorities identifying officials registered on the CSD and those conducting business with the state, and the heads had to verify the presented information and to take action against officials. The MPSA requested feedback by the 31st of March 2018, and we submitted the September progress report to Cabinet. And at the end of September 2018, 22 departments reported to the DPSA. So December, we then handed the names of all those individuals to the then portfolio committee in the Fifth Administration, with the names of employees and departments possibly conducting business with the state. So in 2019, we were a bit delayed in our work with the National Treasury's decision to deny us access to the CSD data because of POPIA concerns. This was resolved. We had legal advice from the state advisors on that, and we now have access to the CSD data. And based on that information, we handed the name list of employees who are possibly conducting business with the state on the 24th of June 2019 to SAPS and the NPA. And in September last year, we submitted a progress report to Cabinet. Now, the current status as is at the end of April 2020 is as follows. We use April 2020 so that we can have a year-on-year assessment with the different years, so that we can see whether there was movement between the one year and the other year. So the end of April 2020, we found that currently 29 national departments are possibly conducting business with the state, and 50 have no employees conducting business with the state. You will see in brackets is the amount that was reflected for last year, 2019, which is now up one from 28 to 29. Now, the provincial departments, KwaZulu-Natal stayed the same as in 2019, 13 possibly conducting business with the state, one that has no employees conducting business with the state. In Gauteng, there is 11, which is up from 7 last year, that's possibly conducting business with the state, and 3 that is now totally clean, down from 7. Northwest, we had 7, it's up from 5, and 4, which is down from 7 last year. Now, Eastern Cape, the same than last year, and the same with Limpopo, the same than last year. Now, for Malanga, it's increased with 2 to 10 departments who have employees that possibly conducting business with the state, and then 2, it's down from 4 last year. And the Free State also is up from 8 last year to 10 now, and then the Northern Cape is also up from 9 last year to 11, and the Western Cape up from 4 last year to 5 this year. Now, the challenges that we experience in terms of this whole process is the first challenge is that of departments who do not respond or poorly respond to DPSA communication, and especially where we request them to verify the employee's status, because that's not something we can do from DPSA side, and to confirm if those individuals did conduct business with the state, because this is also has disciplinary implications, and that is also a decentralized process, which the DPSA do not have control over. So the other challenge is where departments indicate that they are investigating, but there's no follow-up reports on how far they are, and also that they do not indicate whether disciplinary steps are instituted. So we have started the process the beginning of this year to liaise with the ethics officers responsible for those departments on a one-on-one basis to assist them with the process of confirming and if employees are definitely conducting business with the state and if they are indeed employees of that department. The challenge then is also with the ethics officers who are not dedicated. In terms of the regulations, they are just designated, which means that over and above the work that they're already conducting, they also do ethics work. And that also means that there's not a lot of stability, and departments change the ethics officers frequently, and that they are, in some cases, overburdened with work. So they also do not have the requisite knowledge to address the issue of employees conducting business with the state. So the intervention that we did was, every year we host the National Ethics Officer Forum, where we train and create awareness around certain issues for ethics officers, especially in terms of the regulations and what is required of them, and in terms of the functions that's expected from them. And this year we also started with online training sessions in August to address the issue of employees conducting business with the state, which I will expand on a bit later. The other issue is that the Central Supply Database is a national treasury system and not a DPSA system, and we are dependent on National Treasury to provide us with access to that system. We had an issue in 2019, but the National Treasury indicated willingness to work with the DPSA, and we have a letter to the effect to that effect from the DG National Treasury. So the current status, based on the information that we collected at the end of April 2020, we looked at that information again, and it didn't change from 2020 to end of last month. So the 30th of June 2020, the DPSA requested national departments of all the offices of the premiers where employees were listed as possibly conducting business with the state to provide feedback by the 15th of July on the investigations and all the disciplinary actions that were taken. So up to date, the DPSA have received responses from 10 national departments that we requested information on, and 2 that voluntarily gave us information. We actually did not require any information because they did not have employees conducting business with the state, and then also only on 3 provinces. So the following national departments responded. You will see I've listed 12, but that is the 10 that did not respond, and then the 2 that responded that we did not require them to respond. I will indicate those. So basic education responded, employment and labor responded, then environmental affairs, forestry and fishery responded, although they were not required to. Government communication and digital technologies responded, health responded, Office of the Chief Justice responded, Office of the Public Service Commission responded, science and technology responded, the South African Police Services requested extension, and then a week later they responded. The Statistics South Africa responded, tourism responded, and then we also did not expect trade, industry and competition to respond to us, but they also responded. So the national departments that did not respond planning, monitoring and evaluation, presidency, public works and infrastructure, rural development and land reform, social development, traditional affairs, transport, water and sanitation. And these departments that I just listed were the ones that were expected to provide us with information as they had employees who were identified to be conducting business with the state. Of all the 9 provinces, only 3 provinces responded, with KwaZulu-Natal listed 13 departments who had individuals possibly conducting business with the state, and 11 of them responded, and that you will see on the screen now. So Western Cape, there was 5 that we identified, and all 5 responded. And in the Western Cape, there was 11 departments who had employees who were possibly conducting business with the state. 6 of them responded, and the rest of the provinces did not respond. So to assist to address the issue of not responding to DPSA communication and to address the issue of public servants conducting business with the state, and to assist national and provincial departments as well as local governments to enforce this prohibition, on 22 July 2020, the Ministers of Police, Justice and Correctional Services and the Minister for the Public Service and Administration met and agreed to establish a multi-departmental team to assist. Now, this team is coordinated by the Director General for the respective ministry, and they were asked to ensure that all allegations regarding the employees possibly conducting business with the state be investigated, and that the police and the NPA work together to streamline investigations on this new crime, and to where people are found to be guilty, to prosecute. Now, on the 24th of August 2020, the DGs of that multi-departmental team met, and we approved a memorandum of understanding that clearly highlights the roles and responsibilities of the 3 departments in this multi-departmental team, and it was accompanied by a multidisciplinary plan of action that focuses on 10 priority cases, which the information was handed already to the police, except for 1, which is a case in the Free State, which we could not get information on, but that we are working on. And we also handed the list of 1,539 public service employees to be that were identified to be possibly conducting business with the state. So on the 28th of August 2020, the DPSA and the police trained the ethics officers of those implicated departments in an online session so that they're able to assess the allegations, to collect sufficient evidence, and to draft affidavits where transgressions of this prohibition was detected, and to also institute disciplinary steps where needed. So, as the last slide, Honourable Chair, the DPSA, with the assistance of National Treasury, will now continue on a monthly basis, as we've been doing the past few years, to identify the those employees possibly conducting business with the state. The names will be given to the ethics officers immediately, where they will have 14 days to investigate whether those people are indeed conducting business with the state, and where they will be able then to collect information and affidavits that will be handed to the police. And through the monitoring and evaluation committee that's now established in terms of this monitoring, the MOU, we will track progress on each case, and we will then assist to unblock the challenges as they arise. So, thank you, Chair. That is my presentation.
Thank you very much, Doc. DTG. That will bring us members to receive a briefing from CIPRO. Over to you, Advocate Bola.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee of DPSA. I am an old guard of the Portfolio Committee of Trade, Industry and Competition, so it's a pleasure to be here. Chair, let me just look for my presentation quickly to share the content. There's a presentation available, Madam Chair. I have shared the content.
Not yet, but we have received your presentation. Oh, there we are. Now we can see it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Madam Chair and honourable members, just a little bit of a point of slight clarity. We are no longer referred to as CIPRO. Referred to as a CIPC, the Company Intellectual Property Commission. There was an amendment to company law in 2011, which changed our designation. We are now seen as a regulator, all aspects regarding company registration and other laws. So we deal with the issue of enforcement and collaboration regarding those. I like what the Chair said in opening remarks. We have to look at identifying gaps and working together. Certainly is part of the mantra that we at CIPC do. We continue to ensure that we triangulate our resources with other government departments to ensure that we have a full set of data. Madam Chair, I can't see the presentation on my screen, but I have a copy in front of me. I think the committee chairperson might be sharing it, but I will continue.
Yes, I'll suggest that don't bother. He will bring it back, but just continue because we need to receive on time the presentation.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will therefore continue. The first is the outline. My presentation won't be lengthy because we, as a CIPC, we play just a very much supportive role, data exchange role, and a cross-referencing role. What has been mentioned by the speaker prior to me. We also look at how do we analyze some of the data that we share with departments, and therefore we do it in a collaborative fashion. We firmly believe that the integrated government approach, and therefore our coordinated effort to ensuring that the best data set that we have, not only in this portfolio and in this area, but across government streams. So I'll look at the mandate of what we do to tie up to what the presentation is today, how we deal with assisting in a proactive manner. Some of it has been mentioned by the speaker prior to me, but I'll elaborate on that and try and deal with some issues that I think we should pay more attention to. We also look at our collaborative efforts across the value chain of government departments. Our core values is certain partnerships and making sure that our data is freely available, not only in the public sector, but private sector, look at some reactive measures, and we'll try and round you up and see how we as an organization and as a public entity can further assist the portfolio to deal with this. So in terms of the introduction, just to say that we received this particular request, we're looking at the various laws of the pre-admission, and we looked at the issue of what the public administration management regulation states and how do we play this role to try and prohibit public servants from dealing with this. So the way that we do it, Madam Chair, is that, of course, we are the holder of public data, and most importantly, directors of company data, which is the set that is required to be cross-referenced and checked to see if they're dealing with the state. We do so in terms of supplying that to various departments and various entities. We also look at how the declarations are made in the financial interest for subsets of state employees and how to tie those up. In order to deal with the issue of how do we make our data available, we have an open register policy. Not only is it a policy, but actually it is legislated to say that all the data that we hold as an entity in terms of our registers are freely available to government departments. And also freely available to the public. I don't mean freely in terms of cost, but freely available in terms of how do we make it available and how do we display it and how do we disclose it. And therefore, Therefore, none of what is contained within our registers are seen to be confidential. So that is the one hurdle that cannot be used because we need to make those disclosed. We also do this using a lot of technology. We fight a technology-driven organization. We use very innovative means. I won't bore the committee with some of them. It's quite IT jargon. But basically say that we do it in real time. Web services, so you can search on the web with certificates, and therefore you can be able to disclose data that is required for those who request it. In fact, Madam Chair and members, is that the CIPC has MOUs of practically every department, government, and majority of entities, whether in national, provincial, or local government. We have tons and tons of MOUs, and therefore we give them passwords and access, and they can look at our system and disclose their requirements in real time. We assist departments and entities in three ways in dealing with this type of disclosure. One is proactive mechanisms and interventions through a partnership with the DPSA and National Treasury, which I will speak about. In order for us to do this, we try and improve on the transparency. We firmly believe that if there's more eyes that we get data sets, then we'll be able to pick up not only discrepancies, but those who want to try and circumvent the system. So we surely make sure that our data is available to us. We work through collaborative means. I'll speak about the PSD coming forward, and I'll touch on that. And also, lastly, we play a very enforcement role because of our regulatory function, holding hands with law enforcement activities and entities and oversight bodies, ensure that when they are requiring documentation or data from us, including affidavits to appear in court, we certainly assist not only by providing the data, but if there's an appearance that is required, we have our legal department and our disclosure department and do that. So the triangulation of the data is very important. As I said, I believe multiple sources is key. Try and eradicate the scourge, and in order to ascertain the veracity of the data, certainly have to have more players on board. So the mandate of the organization, I think I've touched on, is to, in terms of the Companies Act 1874A and C, state that we must establish and maintain the register, but not only that, and most importantly, as a positive duty, we must make those information freely available in an effective and efficient manner. And I've said the way that we do it is through requests, but not only through requests. We have proactive measures in terms of real-time access to our data, because it is not a static database that we have at the CIPC. As we speak, as I'm presenting to the committee now, we have changes on the database in terms of directors, addresses, the financials, you name it. So it's a key component of our work, and it's a key component of our disclosure obligations. The information required to ascertain whether public servants have entities is available, can be searched, departments of public entities, we have mechanisms in place to do that. So they can certainly have the lookup function. You've given passwords and access codes to various department staff, employees, and they can certainly, whatever is required in terms of verification and checking of the directors, they can do so detailed real time, not only in terms of data, but also downloading of certificates for evidentiary means. Just on the size issue, we even have some high speed links with some entities named STARS. Private sector, we have high speed links with the banks. So in terms of the movement of data on the CIPC register, these entities get them immediately, and they can data model them and use them on the back end to try and verify and to cross-reference and cross-check. So continuing the mandate of the CIPC, just to state that there is no legal impediment for public servants to register the companies, but there is an impediment for them to use those companies to interact with the state as per regulations. So they must disclose this during the annual financial disclosure reporting, as you all know, and to deal with the issue of directorships as well as ownership required in some of those disclosures. But the legal position, I must state quite clearly, because there is a couple of loopholes we have seen, Chair members, is that the CIPC mandate is only to do with the registration of companies and the directors that go with those companies. I should also mention that we have registered co-ops, and that is also stated as the chief, because you can possibly do this with the state or cooperative. But what I should say is that it certainly is a loophole that we've seen, is that there is no data set that we keep, because the law does not require us to keep a data set or information regarding shareholding. So therefore, the legal limitation on this is that even though an employee of the state might not come up as a director, they might use a family member, they might use a friend, they might use whoever, a person in the community, or children, to be put down as directors of a company, they might actually be the ultimate beneficial holders of those shares in that particular company, and therefore ultimately they are the beneficiaries of those contracts. But no way is that kept, only kept in the company itself in terms of the share registers. So if you come to the CIPC and look for it, you won't find it. You'll only find it in the registers. Meaning that the data set is limited in terms of that. We only keep memberships in CCs as well, but those can be tied up into the membership of the CC, equated to the ownership, and therefore loosely, not legally correct, but loosely the shareholder of that particular close corporation. But there has been calls to amend this and to close this particular loophole. There's been an amendment that is proposed in terms of Section 33 of the Companies Act for us to keep beneficial holders or owners of shares. We have to keep it in terms of the register. It is a worldwide trend that is currently going on, and South Africa is currently involved in what is called a peer review for anti-money laundering terror financing. It is seen as a loophole that we do not keep this particular data set, and therefore an amendment has been proposed and will be coming forward to the portfolio committee on trading industry in terms of legislation. We also work very, very closely. We've had quite a lot of meetings over the last few months, or maybe even a few years now. We work very closely with the Financial Intelligence Center, South African Revenue Service, and the Master's Office, and National Treasury plays a key role of bringing all the entities together so that we can include in the governance framework and assistance to support beneficial owners, who are ultimately the persons of the living control. They control the company, and therefore they control the contracts and control the flow of finances regarding that. So there is a look at connectivity between the database information, and therefore we were able to deal with multiple sources to actually get to the actual owner of a company and the actual beneficial holder of the securities. Coming back to our proactive measures, we have an active service level agreement with DPSA, and as I said, multiple departments. We meet annually. They have access to our CIPC online platform. They can see it in real time, and they can verify the existence of juristic persons and of directors. And as I stated, the platform provides for multiple data sets. They can verify the entity, whether it exists, or the status of it, whether it's in business, or whether it's in registration, or whether it's in business rescue, or whether it's in liquidation. They can see those in the comfort of their own offices. They don't have to actually really contact us online. You can verify who the directors are, and these are freely disclosed, and as I say, so they can make them to certificates and use them for multiple purposes, including disciplinary inquiries, as stated by my colleague in the previous presentation. So the data is required by multiple sources. We haven't had it to the freely and freely. As far as our collaboration efforts to ensure transparency, yes, we were quite instrumental in the setting up of what is called the CSD, which is a central supplier database. We were a part of the regional project team and the ongoing project team. We are a collaborative partner of National Treasury to receive the real-time data and changes to company data. And we were part of developing the particular system. It's been going for many years now, possibly 2015. Business tendered to the state, the company has to find itself in the confines of the CSD and the central supplier service. Its aim was to simplify government procurement and to look at stringent verification mechanisms. But basically, it's an authentication system. Look at the source to see the also look at aspects of where it's located. That gives a holistic view for companies that are awarded the tenders. So there's this relationship that we have between CIPC, Treasury, and SARS. That was phase one. Phase two is slightly lagging, trying to bring additional sources on board. Some deal with tendering and stuff, trust, business trust, to look at bringing the master in, but that certainly has not been attended to as such in this year. So it was a way of dealing with compliance issues, but also to speed up the need of doing things states so we have tenders can be done on a speedier basis and enhance compliance measures being put in place. So I stated that it's recommended that CSD's scope is expanded to include DPSA and the personnel data. I think my colleague was also mentioning that we need to look at how we screen directors of companies that would intend us that are government employees. And I believe that we can have a set whereby real time the CSD database can be plugged into the personnel database and additional questions can be asked, additional triangulation can be done. Red flag where the personnel data that is inputted by that particular staff or employee of the state suddenly becomes red flag and it raises certain concerns regarding that. So more interconnectivity across these entities is required for us to have more reliable data. We've done it in the past with a system which is called the Prism Portal, which was launched by the Prism last year in November. We currently at CIPC have a full data connectivity between ourselves, so that's the revenue service, and entities belonging to the Department of Labor, as well as banks and multiple other entities. So it's quite possible for us to plug in the DPSA data and therefore have a red flag to the CSD. As far as reactive assistance to government institutions and legal framework that attached to that, as I said, we assist various organs of state in the investigations into fraudulent activities, interventions of the Public Service Act. And we do this by revision of those documents as well as by ensuring that affidavits are done and doing multiple checkups on the system. If there are changes that have been affected to it, we also look at the historic aspect of those companies, the historic data. Because what happens is that sometimes when you undo some of these employees, they suddenly remove themselves, but we can historically look when those are done. We have timelines attached to those, and the database will be able to record all the historic data way back to when the company was formed and the formation of that particular entity. We receive it in multiple ways, formal, informal, emails, get calls, but we certainly deal with the aspect of subpoenas in terms of the Procedure Act, and the law enforcement agencies fully regarding that. We deal with all aspects of enforcement agencies, including the Hawks, NPA, and the SIU, and we even have meetings with the prosecution teams, some of aspects, trying to be able to prevent. And the next one that we deal with is the Auditor General. The Auditor General is part of the regulatory audits obtained from all entities that are audited by the AG, receives data sets and data dumps, as well as real-time data of all directorships and other company data that we hold, and they use it as part of the regulatory audit function, and also to cross reference against employee records and to see if there are issues on those auditors having those staff and companies, and what are their relations to the state. So, in conclusion, Madam Chair and members, is that yes, we do have all of this data. Crossing of data, the usage of data, and the disclosure of data, as I said, National Treasury, which is in real time, verifying investments of companies. But what it does not contain is certainly a bit limited, and we need to obviously open that up as well, that it's not included in terms of the verification of directors. So the CSD only looks to see what the status of the company is, whether it is registered, whether it is standing in terms of its annual returns, up to date, not in the process of being registered. He has not been liquidated, he is not in the state of business rescue. So that's what they look for. So we need to see additional data and also look at verification of those particular directors, whether they function, and therefore we need to put that in a plug-in as part of additional checks that the CSD is required to do. As a result of that not being done, there is large volumes and increase in ad hoc requests in terms of the reactive investigations by various departments and agencies and enforcement agencies to gain information on our end to assist as far as what is the disciplinary processes or enforcement and prosecuting processes that are required. So CIPC SARS and National Strategy are key role plays in CSD. We need to broaden that base. In the beginning of the integrated government system, and therefore more data sets that we have, more linkages which are now allowed by technology. We can put some information in the cloud and extracting that from our multiple registries, and therefore we have a full set of what we're looking at in the state. I believe that the inclusion of the PPSA data will certainly assist as far as this aspect is concerned, and staff being employees of the state, but doing business with the state, and therefore those personal data will certainly help trying to plug that. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As I said, my presentation will be a bit short, but to the point, because we play a supporting role in terms of the data that is required. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Here we are, honorable members. I think Advocate Tumman's presentation is a little bit exciting, but nevertheless, let me take forward honorable members' questions. We are going to be a little bit nice today, even the audience will allow them to speak, because we are not voting, we are just engaging, we are not going to take any decision, we are just engaging on the presentation. So the first speaker will be Honorable Dooley, followed by Honorable Clark, followed by Dabezi Taubabuzele Kulu, followed by Honorable Makomane, followed by Honorable Malumane, followed by Honorable Dr. Schreiber, Honorable Lisi, Honorable Maluleka, Honorable Matisse, and Honorable Malati. And lastly, Honorable Kini. I'm sure I've covered every point in terms of the attendance register. Over to you, Honorable Dude. Over to you, ma'am.
Chair, my sincere apologies.
Are you here?
Chair, my sincere apology. I had to catch up the thingy, the presentation.
No problem.
I relocated. My network was not allowing me, so I had to relocate.
Okay, no problem. We'll come back to you if you wish so.
Please,
do give an opportunity to. Okay, let us give Honorable Clark over to you, Honorable Clark, if you wish to say something or engage.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentations, and I'm really happy to see that there is a way forward in terms of the issues we face with officials doing business with the state. So there's a couple of questions I'd like to ask. Will all companies that qualified for COVID-19 tenders be subjected to the CIPRA processes? Because it would be a very interesting factor to see if which of the staff members were involved with these tenders, because National Treasury rules and processes were not followed in these instances, and so, of course, abatedly, we saw huge fraud and corruption. So it would be very interesting to know whether this issue would be dealt with in terms of the processes as well. That's the first question. Then if the DPSA are to include the databases into the CSD, what would the timeframes be of that process? Because I wouldn't like to see it open-ended and in a year's time we sit here again and we still haven't reached that outcome. I also would like to know if the personal system would have the capabilities in order to integrate into the database of the CSD. Then last year, we also discussed this very issue with officials doing business with the state, and we were promised a report from the SAPS to give us some guideline as how far they were with all these investigations, and that never came to this committee as yet. And I'd like to know, when will we see this as these processes unfold so that the committee is aware that we are progressing with this issue? And, of course, also the report as to how many of the government officials from a national and a provincial level were involved in terms of tenders during COVID-19 as well. I also noted that the DGs were part of the coordinated team to ensure that allegations regarding employees are going to be part of that team to investigate officials doing business with the state. Have they also checked to see if any of the DGs are not implicated in terms of this matter themselves? And then I would also like to know, how do we deal with the status of juristic persons, as this is prevalent with the CCs, and if we could get a legal point on that, because as far as I know, and I speak under correction, that if you're a director of a CC, and there is no claim on you, on your personal assets, if they had to establish a claim on you if you were found guilty for fraud and corruption. And then I also would like to know what system is put in place within the DPSA in terms of disclosures, because we know that in terms of disclosures, many times the officials do not comply, and in terms of those disclosures, they've also got to disclose whether any of their family members are doing business with the state. And what process do we put in place to ensure that this actually happens? Because we've seen that on many occasions, the officials don't disclose what they should disclose, and we have the same problem with their performance management agreements too. They do not follow up on that, and I don't think the DPSA has a stringent process to deal with that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Clark. Just quickly, I should have stated in my opening remarks that SAPS, we were expecting them, but they did request on time to be rescheduled. So we will then engage through the administration to invite them. But they were invited, it's just that they were caught up with other ways, so they did apologize. Over to you, Honourable, it will be Honourable Christine Trebekulunda, is it? Must I skip? Okay, silence is golden. He will indicate if he wishes to contribute then. That will bring us to Honourable Oman. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues. One would want to ask questions, but let me still familiarize myself with the committee. I will then come back. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ma'am. That will bring us to Honourable Maluman. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me say good morning to our colleagues, our staff members, and our guests. Let me welcome both presentations that was presented to us today. I really appreciate to see that the department is doing something with employees doing business with the state, even though the number this year is increasing concern to us. The other thing that I want to ask to the department is that what is the procedure? Because there are procedure, there are regulations that the government has put to say that if there's a person who's doing business and to be fined that is doing business and has never or declared or anything, are there any employees that have been charged or any employees that have been done, maybe the correction measures that have been taken to those to the employees? The other thing that I would like to maybe make a proposal to the department is that, as you know, that each and every year when we do applications, when there are advertisements, why can't be there something that an applicant declare first before entering in the government as being in a government employee, so that you know that this employee, even in his or her Z83 form, has when he applied, he stated that maybe this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that they can be maybe requested to declare or any other thing. The declaration, how do we do the declaration? Do we do declarations in all employees, or there are certain employees who do declarations when they do have the company? And the other matter that I want to ask is that if I'm working under the Department of Public Works and I declare that I'm doing business, but I'm not doing it under the Department of Public Works, I'm doing it with health while I've declared, and then you've given me a permission to continue doing business with the state, what does the department want to do, or what does it speak about? Can we maybe get clarity? Because there are others that are saying we have declared, we've got letters that says we can continue doing business with the state. So I just want to find out on those matters. Thank you.
Honourable Member, Honourable Schreiber, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all the colleagues. Chair, I have three quick questions from my side. The first one is really, I think, the biggest one, and it goes back to this issue that I have been and the Honourable Clark and Malatsi have been highlighting regarding how we appoint, how the state appoints these officials in the first place. I think it also links to the previous question. Why do we appoint public servants who go on to actually abuse their position in order to benefit from that? I think that's something where this committee and the ministry should focus more specifically. What measures can be put in place so that you go to the root of the problem, which is, why are these officials employed in the first place? What kind of requirements are there to prevent people who will take advantage of their position from ever actually being employed in the first place? That's the first question, Chair. The second one is similar to the one that I asked during our previous meeting, when the Public Service Commission showed us data on the number of cases in the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. Chair, I appreciate the information being shared with this committee regarding suspected cases and sort of, you know, indications. But actually the question is, how many public servants have actually been found guilty or even just arrested for illegally doing business with the state? Can we get that number? Because frankly, as long as we are tracking this and we're seeing that there are these number of officials who appear to be doing business with the state, but there are never any consequences for that, then it becomes a meaningless data gathering exercise rather than one of consequence management. So can the presenters give us any indication as to actual real life consequences that have happened for officials implicated? Chair, the final question, I'm not sure who will want to take this one, but I think it's a very important one. It relates to what are the impacts on the work of the department when there are pronouncements made by politicians, very senior politicians, including someone like Ace Magashule, who suggested that there's actually nothing wrong with ANC-linked public servants and cadres doing business with the state. Does it not actually undermine the work of the officials and all the things that we've been discussing today when there are senior leaders of the governing party who actually goes and says there's nothing wrong with this, despite what's written in the Public Administration Management Act, despite all of the information that we've received today? What is the impact of political leaders making pronouncements like that on the work of the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. That will bring us to Honourable Honourable Sibisi.
Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, I doesn't have any question, but it's just a comment that one would like to see whether what has been said today is being implemented, because we always see a lot of public servants who are still doing the business with the state. So we wish that whatever has been said today, action must be taken and it must be implemented. By the way, thanks for the presentation, and we are looking forward to see everything being executed. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Maluleka, over
sure.
to you, ma'am. Honourable Maluleka.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everybody.
No, one second, Honourable Maluleka. Ngabe sitha uzolinda ngoba ngeke ngabiza ngangakuthola ngicela ulinde.
Okay, Chairperson, let me join other honourable members to appreciate the presentation and to say really the department is working hard to ensure that we nip in the bud this thing of officials doing business with the state. I know that it's going to be a difficult thing, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. We can see that there is progress. It's not going to be something that is going to be won just after 2 days or overnight, but it needs a lot of things that we must need this thing in the at the part. Chairperson, I think most of the questions have been raised, but I just have some, I think two of them. The first one, it would be on the 1,539 cases of the state employees doing business that they have been identified. I just want to find out from the department. Is the department making some follow-ups on the cases? And if so, how far are the cases? And if not, why not? And maybe on the issue of ethical conduct, I know that the department have this ethical conduct, but maybe the department must come up with a strategy. I don't know how. You know, people who are, especially in the supply chain management or in the finance department or units in department, most of the business people, they will be complaining to say for their businesses or their invoices to be paid, some officials will solicit some bribes or whatever forms of payment before they can make sure that their invoices are paid. I'm not sure how the department is going to make sure that at least something is done to ensure that those officials, if they are found to have solicited some finances or some bribes, then they are found guilty and criminalized. I know that there are some policies and regulations that if people are found guilty, then they are going to be suspended or maybe dismissed from the department. But some of these things, they are not really visible. They do it behind the closed doors. But you'll find that outside people will be talking about these things. But maybe the department, as they are saying, that they are engaged in making sure that every time the departments are made aware that there are some of this ethical conduct that they must follow. And maybe just to say thank you very much for the department to ensure that at least what officials are employed for, they are doing the good job, not to do things that they will make people to undermine government efforts to ensure that people get services. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. That will be Honourable Matsipe. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Lesoma. In inception or absorption of the new employees according to public service regulations in all 3 years of government conducting business with the state, don't it register immediately to say you cannot do business with the state due to this data, maybe data reporting? What could be the problem not picking up, and also how did you detect this misconduct because it was not disclosed? And then on those 11 departments who did not respond, what was the reason for them not to respond? And then on CIPC, when you are a director and you are alone in the city and you want to include another beneficiary or other people to be in that city, it is possible, and it is possible. And how long does the certificate appear with those evictions? And the last one, at what stage is the process towards including a governance framework and system to record beneficial owners with the Master's Office, SARS, and the Financial Intelligence Center? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member. That will be Honorable Malati over to you, sir. Honorable Malati.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Schreiber basically covered the primary points that I wanted to make. But the secondary one is, in reality, we operate with the full knowledge that doing business with the state is legally wrong and is unethical. So what I want to establish from these presentations is the preventive measures, because one, we are dealing with a situation of where the law states what shouldn't be done, and the act of unethical practices by public servants doing business with the state continues. But secondly, because there is no mechanism to pick this up instantly and stop it from happening, which would have resulted in many of these unethical transactions that involve public servants from taking place. So I want to establish, particularly from the department, in terms of the very first internal processes of establishing that public servants are not doing business with the state. And the secondary one being, once that has been picked up, what is the first course of action that happens to the public servant concerned? And thirdly, that given the work that has gone into this, is there a database that exists that has details of the public servants who have done business wrongfully so with the state, the nature of such businesses, and the value of those businesses, so that that information is instantly even available to the committee and to the public? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I'll go back to the Honorable Gidi, and then I will go back to Honorable Utabizit. Honorable Gidi, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Technology Chair. Honorable Chair, thank you so much. Good morning, colleagues and all the honorable members. Honorable Chair, mine is not a question. I don't have a question. It's just to appreciate the work done by the department so far, because as much as this issue is frustrating to us as politicians of officials that are doing business with the government, which the department is also the same. So I'm therefore saying, on the issue of the department not responding to issues that they are supposed to be responding to in terms of people that are doing business with the state, I think if we can really make sure that there are time frames to avoid the non-response of the different departments, so that they know that they have to report at a certain all the means that the department is doing to make sure that this is to an end. On the issue of SAP, we would really wait and see or hear from SAP when they have a chance to come to us. I understand or accept the apology by you, Honorable Chair, to say they could not come to us today so that we can get the necessary information that we were looking for from them. So, Chair, thank you so much for that.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Ndabezi, after the call.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry. Technology is fighting me here, and the network is. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay. All I wanted just to raise, Chairperson, thanking the presenters, but I'm not sure whether I missed point when it comes to identifying the public servants that need to be dealt with who are in national and provincial legislatures. Was that, Chairperson, having the concern around the shenanigans in the local municipalities too? You know, in local municipalities, what one has been exposed to was the fact that even the employees of the municipalities, they simply bring in their front companies to do business. And that badly affects the local residents out there because they don't get the services they require from the municipalities simply because of the shenanigans that are taking place in the local municipalities. You find officials bringing their front companies, you find officials, or you find those companies even not doing work, but they get paid, but have not done anything. You know? So the feeling on my side and thinking is that maybe if the structures could maybe widen their net as far as trying to sort of bring to book all the wrongdoers as well as trying to save for the state, because my understanding is that even those funds that are going down to the local structures, some are from national and provincial governments to assist the local societies in pushing the development to the communities. That's the concern that I wanted just to. But excuse me for having sort of trying to interrupt simply because of the network as well as the technology. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ndabezi. Ma'am Pemba, are you still want to come back or
yes,
I will pass?
Yes. No, thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you for the presentation. Although I caught it in the middle, particularly with the TSA. Those are the challenges that we have, our daily challenges with this IT. Now, Chair, I want to commend the department for the swift action they've made in terms of strictly avoiding government officials to have business with government. It shows that they are taking this very serious. From 2014, laying up the background regulations, etc. I want also to remind the meeting, I think Honorable Malomane hinted on that, to remind the meeting that previously there was something allowing the officials to apply and be given permission to do business with a government. And also we should understand that much as there is a code of conduct, but if I remember very well, nothing was that binding, particularly with a level 1 up to level 12. I'm not quite sure. I'm subject for correction. And to me, this is like transformation. And transformation doesn't happen overnight. That's why I started by saying I'm commending the department for the work that they have done so far. I'm not saying uti uyalibonga ikhudeli kikiligile umsebenzi walo kukikilika. But umsebenzi mawumuhle fanele ukuthi siwunqome. Because officials afakile ama-clause, bafake ama-clause kakhulu in doing business with government. So the work that has been done, the action, the movement that we are seeing here, that they've been mentioning, it shows that they are very serious in taking this forward. But again, Chairperson, I wanted also to touch on the issue of ethics offices. To say, is there anything that can sort of bind them, uphold them to act as fast as they can? Maybe if the appointment is not proper, how do we then trim it to befit the work that they're supposed to do? Because it's not, it's a bit worrisome that these ethics officers are not dedicated. Again, Chair, in terms of provinces, I feel that provinces are becoming islands of some sort, and they try to, some are becoming islands and independent, because instead of decreasing the number, the numbers are increasing. I think those are the areas that we should look at moving forward, because the work, the movement is there, but there are some still here and there. Here and there. How do we then tighten up? How do we then strengthen? And Chair, lastly, I mean, this part of work is really difficult to deal with people who've been there even before you. As I'm saying, they've put clause. You see, that's why I would also like to thank the presentation from CIPC, the third PC. I'm saying together we can do more. If CIPC nabo bangabamba lapha eceleni ngendlela yabo, so that to do the screening, particularly to do the screening that can assist the department as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
before the department can respond, I will ask some questions and also try to make some way forward here to say, in terms of labs, is there anyone that I'm omitting?
Okay, this is Honorable Gomani.
Oh, you're coming back now.
Please.
Because you said you'll pass for today. Okay, you may.
Thank you very much, Chair. As one was going through this presentation, because one would just want to make just one or two few questions, quick questions, Chair. I'm sorry about that. As one is looking at slide number 9 of the presentation by the department, Chairperson, it is there, indicated that the department has identified employees who are doing business with the state, and then they have intercommunicated with departments up to them submitting to the cabinet. One would then ask as to what consequent management or what tangible report was then referred to the committee. And lastly, Chairperson, maybe if one would maybe know what tools or what capacity does the committee hold to assist in enforcing the laws of in terms of how they are being articulated by the department. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry for that, Chairperson.
No problem. We are still on call. I was saying that, honourable members, that in terms of SAP issues raised by honourable Maluleka, honourable Schreiber, honourable Malazi, and yourself now, honourable Gomani, is that let's pass some of these things because those are details. The presentation, we're having it for the first time in this term. So the sooner the better we invite SEPs and also other linking departments, as it were, so that they can come with the details to say what level are these officials at of money value, what space are they doing business with, and all those things. To say, let's probably when they respond, may they pass that to us so that we can get that information when they come back together with the, which is DPSA. But also in terms of DPSA, we are much aware that DPSA coordinates the information and make regulations and guide the departments. But departments are the ones that need to implement. Hence, I will say that on that one, honorable members, let's also identify the so-called the number one serial offenders, as it were. Like your province, you can see where a province will be from 4 to 10. That's outrageous. So then we do have that capacity to invite them to our committee so that they can answer for themselves. But I'm sure that also in terms of Public Service Commission, where the EAs, they don't respect the laws of the country, as it were, in terms of their mandate, as it were, needs also to be part of that meeting so that they can tell us what they have done, because they are supposed to bring those things to our notice so that we can assist them in that space to call those departments and also probably ask them to say they must raise those issues also with the president, because Public Service Commission is supposed to report to the president as well, although they report to us, to Parliament. But in terms of those other issues that might not be necessarily will take time to come before our attention as a committee. The other one that I would like now is what I would like DPSA to take home in particular, the parcel system. I've had this in terms of disciplinary cases, declaration of financial interest, everything. The pay structure is there, is uploaded to parcel. As far as I can recall, that parcel at one stage we advised that it needs to be upgraded. One would love to hear how far that process, because we don't want to say when we ask about that. And that could be a national disaster. But I would like that. I know that Treasurer is a project leader, but the PSA must talk to that. Whether are we not overloading the system, or has it been upgraded as promised in the previous years? The other one that I think I've covered the issue, but the other one, which is not necessarily out-term, it's a where departments seek permission and the responsible official doesn't respond to say no or yes. But after a few days, after 30 days, it will be taken as permission granted. Is it not a moonlighting of a special type then? But I know in terms of the boards and other commissions where departments are directly represented, those people, they don't receive stipends on that one. So that one, I think I understand from that angle. But still the question that Honorable Member, I think it was Honorable Mosipo that raised that, still stands that it needs to be responded to. The other one that I'll say, Honorable Members, we must also, when we invite staff, DPME come to account to us, they must tell us why they don't comply. How are they going to monitor and evaluate other departments if they don't comply, even OCWAP? And it's quite discouraging. I hope by the time they come to us, the picture would have improved in this space. The other one that... DPSA, that I don't find it comfortable convincing that the mere fact that there's no official responsible to upload this information. When you recruit somebody, you recruit or put somebody to parcel to be in the payroll, you use the ID. The ID should be able to tell you, based on what Advocate Viola have said,
we've lost you, Chair.
There is an answer there. It's just that please do respond in writing to us so that also we can cross reference. When you come back, we can respond to those issues. Over to you, FTB, Dr. Sulman, and also Advocate Viola. But I'll start with DPSA, if you may. DPSA?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you broke up the last discussion. I don't think any one of us could hear your comments after that or the moonlighting. I know you said that there must be some things that we must respond to in writing, but I didn't get that, ma'am.
Probably, let me assist you quickly.
Okay, thanks.
Doctor, can I just assist? No, I was saying that the permission, when an employer has applied for the permission to be granted, I understand that within 30 days, if there's no response, whether no or yes, then it will be taken as if permission is granted. And I think that one needs to be looked at. But also, it encourages moonlighting of a special type. Quickly, the other one, I know that in terms of people who sit in the board or commissions representing the directed department, they don't receive the stipend. So, but also the other one is the parcel system. I think you did get that one. The other one was the DPME issue. That way it's very discouraging. But we'll engage the DPME when they come before the committee to respond and also give us the clarity. How are they going to monitor other departments if they also behave the same like them? Over to you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thank you, members of the House, for the encouraging messages that you also gave. And your critique is not seen as criticism, but also to build our systems and processes. Honourable Clark, my response to you regarding the databases of DPSA and that of National Treasury, we do not merge information, we do not integrate. We just dump information from the CSD database to the PASOL database in a secluded environment that there's no fear of interference, security breaches, that type of things. And then overnight, we get the information that we want that's extracted from the system. So, Honourable Chair, that also may answer your question about do we not overload the PASOL system. These things doesn't interfere directly with the PASOL system itself. It's just additional functions where you explore the possibility to extract data then from that database for our own purposes. So, Honourable Clark, then, regarding the number of government officials, if they are involved in tenders, especially now with COVID tenders, if we would have picked that up, and the DGs that part of this process, if they are also checked, I can confidently say if they are not on the CSB captured as employees or as individuals doing seeking for tenders for government, then we would not have them on the list. So if they're not on the list, then they cannot be guilty of this. So the system...
Advocate Vaula, can you just remove the presentation from the screen, please? You may proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The system in the DPSA for the e-disclosure, we have a contract with CITA, who is running the system for us. It's an electronic financial disclosure system with all the requirements that you need to submit. We have a rigorous system where we inform government officials to comply. If they don't, they follow up on those who did not. We have a current, for this financial year, a 98% submission rate for senior managers, which is quite high. So that system we also used to link it up with the personal information that we have on people doing other administrative work to see if these people that missed, that did not disclose, but they did request for permission to do other remunerative work, and then they did not disclose that in the financial disclosure system. So the system, it's not streamlined 100%. Some of it is manual, but there is a lot of work going in terms of integrating the databases and to see how we can utilize that data to our benefit as the DPSA. So, Honourable Malumane, the number increasing is a concern for us as well. The procedure that we do, if we, how we manage this whole process of people conducting business with the state, the end of the month, we receive a report from the Central Supplier Database, where they indicate to us all the names that were flagged on the CSD system as public servants, because when you do a request to register on that system, there is a question that asks if you are a public servant. So if you indicate that you are, you will not be registered. But when they do not indicate that, it slipped through. Then we use that database, we run it through PowerShell, and we pick up the name then with your ID number, and then we can verify that you are quite possibly a public servant. It may be that you've resigned the month before, so that PowerShell was not updated. So that's why we then refer that name list to the department so that they can then verify if the employee is still in the on their books or not. And then if they find that the employee is, it's their duty, as the Honourable Chair rightly said, to then take disciplinary steps against that individual. So they will come then, confront the person, ask for the information, get the relevant data or evidence, because DPSA, when we do send the name list, we also send all the information of the tenders, the value of the tender, the companies involved, all of that, that we also get from the CSD system. So that information now in the process that we have now with the SATs and the NPA, we then hand it to SATs to start with the investigation, because the SATs need to have credible evidence to start the investigation. And they then work hand in hand with the prosecutors then to prosecute the case and then to charge and prosecute. So that is the process that we follow. So some of the departments already did do some corrective measures where they asked the individuals to deregister, where they did not conduct business, but they registered on the system. So they asked them to deregister before they started conducting business with the state. Some of them even had disciplinary cases against the employees. And most of them indicate that they are still busy with investigations to get that information. So Honorable Molomani, I also take your proposal in a good spirit that when people apply, they should then in the Z83 form indicate. And that is part of the directive where we indicate it. Before a person is appointed in the public service, you need to inform that person that you cannot do business with the state once you join. If you want to do other remunerative work, there's certain stringent criteria that you need to abide with before you can be allowed to do that, so that we you don't get people get surprised when they hear that they cannot do business with the state or do other remunerative work as they wish. So there is also on the CSD, as I indicated, the declaration that you need to complete. If you are a public servant, you don't get registered on the system. So the issue around the if you are working for the Department of Health, can you do the business with the Department of DPSA for argument's sake? You cannot. The law is very clear that you cannot do business with the state, and all of those departments are part of the state. So, Honorable Schreiber, the appointment of officials to the public service is really an important issue. You need to appoint the right people. Unfortunately, some people do, after they get appointed, venture into this criminality of doing business with the state. And that is why we had those measures put in place by CSB, where if you can only do business with the state if you're registered on the tender system, which is in the CSB. So if you indicate there that you're a public servant, you will not be appointed. But if you do not indicate, we will then pick it up through the process where we match you with a parcel system. So I know my minister and my DG always say if they can be the first ones to go and arrest these public servants doing business with the state, they would do that. Unfortunately, that's not the mandate of the DPSA, as the Honourable Chair indicated. So that information of how many we have actually and how many people were arrested, I will rather leave for SAPS to answer that. Honourable Maluleka, we have 1,538 cases. We follow up with those departments. We wrote the letters, as I indicated in the presentation. And our DG's office is now also contacting one by one of the DG's to respond to why they did not provide us with information. And then in terms of ethical conduct, we do have a code of conduct for supply chain managers, for finance managers, and this whole issue of ethical conduct must be also, it's a system where you also need to have a culture of ethics in a department where action is taken against people who do not abide with the rules and regulations and the law, but also reporting, to encourage reporting if you see people venturing into this, to report that so that there can be action taken. Then Honourable Matsipe, I've already indicated that when you are absorbed into the public service, you cannot just do business. That is the HR's function, to inform the people that in the panel that want to be appointed to the public service. And then also the reasons, as I've indicated, our DG is following up with all the different departments to provide us with answers why they did not submit the information. But I also indicated that we're working very close with the ethics officers now, where we where the ethics officers did not change the last month, so that we can address this issue with the departments on a one-on-one basis. Then, Honourable Malazzi, the mechanism, I think I've explained how we deal with preventing public servants from getting onto the database and to venture into tenders. Then regarding the database, I can assure you we have a database with all the possible public service employees, the name list, the data around the volume or the nature of the business, the value of the business, all of those, but it's still just allegations. And that is the list that we send to the department to verify so that we can come up then with a database where we know exactly these are the people. Because from my experience, there may be 1,539 on the list, but I will be surprised if it's more than 300 people definitely doing or conducting business with the state. Because there's also issues not only of people that resign from the department, but also wrong appointments, which we, over the last few months and years, rectified with the CSD staff, so that we don't flag those people anymore. Then, time frames, I think we did allow them enough time to report to us, the department, and then I think the other issue was the issue around ethics officers. The ethics officers, they are held accountable because they are actually designated by the HOD. So there should be support for them to do their work. There should be performance assessments, all of that. But we also recognize from the DPSA side that the role and responsibility of the ethics officer increased significantly. It should actually be an appointment, but with a bloated public service, we cannot just go nilly-willy and appoint more people to the system and pay them. So what we've done from the DPSA side is to start with assisting them with thorough guidelines, with training, support through forums, and also other channels that we reach out to them to assist them to do their work to the best of their ability. So I thank you, Madam Chair. I think that was all the questions. If I missed one or two, I'd request. Maybe, Chair, on your issue of moonlighting, the issue of moonlighting, you're quite right, Chair. If you request for permission to do other remunerative work and you do not get a response within 30 days, it's deemed to be approved. But we've built into the process of the directive a new level where we say if you have been deemed to approved, the ethics officers must screen those deemed approval. And if they find that there is a conflict of interest or criminality or whatever, they must immediately revoke that permission. So it's no longer that where you just have it and then you carry on for another year or two. It must be revoked. That is what we agree to. Then in terms of the people on board, the DPSA is currently busy with the database to assess who's all the people on board, and also just to see, because you're right to say that they're not supposed to receive any payment, but we just want to follow up on that as well so that we clear that that does not happen. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Doc. Let's advocate over to you if there are any areas that you feel that you must report to.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. A very few questions for me, most were directed at the department, but there's a few that I'd like to answer to. The one question was by the Honourable Clerk, who asked the question about are there any requests for disclosure of data on directors as regards investigations of COVID-19? Yes, we have received those from law enforcement agencies like the SIU for us to assist them with supplying of data related to directors and functioning of the company and where they're located, etc. So we're currently involved in quite a few of those. I didn't mention in the presentation that we do have some active responses that we assist, and these are currently those. The other question by the Honourable Clerk was the issue around if a member of a CC, I think she mentioned the issue of the director of the CC. You don't get directors of CCs, you only get members, you get directors of companies. What happens if they are found to be involved in issues that he's currently discussing. What will happen is that there is something called limited liability, which is a separation between the assets belonging to the company and assets belonging to yourself. But if you are found to have been involved in matters involving fraud or any criminal activity, or even the company's estate, you have set up a company for fraudulent means, therefore the separation falls away. Something in law we call piercing the corporate veil, and therefore you will be held personally liable in the personal capacity, and therefore your assets will become available to be dealt with in terms of the law. So there is that proviso legally in terms of separation. The other question that I have was from the Honourable Motsepe, who spoke about how long do we deal with CIPC for the amendments of directors, for the amendments of members. It is a 24-hour process. As they come in within a few hours, they are gone out. So if Mr. A comes, is currently a director or a member, and if X wants to come in, by tomorrow you will know exactly the amendment that has been done, and therefore our database gets updated immediately. I did discuss it, and I did mention it in my presentation about the nature of the database consistently changing. The reason why we have this quick turnaround time is to ensure that we have reliable data at a particular instance in time. And the last question from the Honourable Matepa was the issue around where are we. I think she was asking where are we with regarding the process of beneficial owners. There are a couple of schemes that have been set up under the auspices of the FIC and National Treasury. One is a legal stream, one is a governance stream, the framework, one is a technology stream of issue about triangulating of the databases, and lastly is the infrastructure stream. Most of these streams have been set up. However, they are all dependent on the legal amendment to the Companies Act, but we're running them in parallel. The amendment will be dealt with in terms of an holistic amendment to the Companies Act by the current portfolio committee of trading with through competition. It's therefore on their radar, but the other streams are working fully in order to be ready once the amendment is done, show that the governance technology infrastructure plan is based for us to look at. Those are all the questions from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate. That show, honorable members, brings us to the end, but also we can't just have an engagement without saying what then from our side. We will schedule a meeting with that, invite Public Service Commission, invite DPME, because they are supposed to do something in that space as well, and have all the cases, not only COVID, because we're not event orientated, but including COVID-19, in what space the other ones are, what levels are those individuals, and what amount and who, where, but also at a level that also we don't seem to encroach to the administration, but at the level of the senior management, as it were, if they are in. Dr.
Schreiber? I just want to note that there was a question not answered. If you can just come back to that after this.
Okay, sure. Can we? Then we will make sure that also the level also of senior management, so that they can account for their supporting it as well. The other one that I would say we should refer some of this to advise our counterparts of the COCTA portfolio committee to look at seriously and close with the local government. I agree with Honorable Kirikolo. So we'll be, if need arises, we can have joint committees as well. But let's allow them to have a space on that, and also request NCOP also to do the same. But also we'll maintain, that's one, which is my last point as a way forward also, which is one of the issues that we'll put as a standing item as one of our checklists in our resolution checklist, as it were, so that also we can measure ourselves that are we making a dent or not. With that, I think we really appreciate, and at least we understand how much damage is there, but also how much work for this committee that we need to do to assist these departments that are investing in this behavior, so that we can assist them to avoid doing that moving forward. With that, Honorable Schreiber, the question was, and I'm sure they will send it in writing, because I'm worried about the time, we must also deal with the other issue, which is quite important as well. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get this on record that it wasn't answered. The question was related to the impact that pronouncements made by senior political leaders can have on the work of the department. One example being the Secretary General, Ace Magashule, from the governing party, saying that, in effect, there's nothing wrong with doing business with the state. I'd like to know from the officials, what is the practical, real-world impact of reckless comments like that? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Schreiber, Doctor, you will know very well on that one that you are putting the officials in a very uncomfortable situation. They can't respond for political parties and their principles. And I think it is more of a political question, but for now I will say that they must just not respond to that one. But you add it for records and then it has to be recorded like that. But
yes,
for the purpose of this committee, we can't discuss political parties.
Yes, just to respond to that, Chair. It's not a political question. The question is about the work of the officials and the department. And this committee must be in a position to interrogate anything that has a negative, potentially negative effect on the work of the department. And I think it's an entirely logical thing to question whether pronouncements like that by senior political leaders have an impact on whether the department is actually able to do its work.
I'm saying, Honourable Schreiber, on that call, without creating a dialogue then, I suggest that they don't respond to that. When the minister is here before the committee, please repeat that question. Then, because the DM did apologize, because I would have referred that question to the Honourable DM, and it is, she's not here. She did apologize. Let's move forward, Honourable Members. With that, I would suggest then, and thank both the department and advocate for the presentation. Looking forward to engage with you in the near future. Thank you very much. Then it will bring us to discuss. I'm just opening my iPad for the agenda item. My apologies. My colleague, quickly just help me here with the next agenda item. There we are. Okay, now I've got it. It says the minutes, the adoption of the let's look at the advent. I would suggest, I'm not too sure between you, Maskole, and Julius, who's going to take us through the advent, and then we are going to engage. And I know that the advent is a similar advent that is in line with the act in terms of that, but of course then the other details, the subcommittee members, then they will deal with the issues and have a common understanding of what does it mean to be fit and proper in their understanding, so that when they engage and do the process of shortlisting and other related activities, they are in the same understanding in terms of that one, because it could be, if it's not unpacked at that level, then it could be very an open-ended issue. But having said that, Maskole, can you tell me who's going to take us through that advert and the proposed program as well moving forward for the subcommittee members?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Yes, Chair, what I will do is that I will flag the advert just to allow members to have a look at it. I do believe that members had an opportunity to thoroughly look at the advert and also the program of the committee. Can the members see the document?
Not yet. Okay. From my side, I can't see it.
Yeah. No, it's okay. So as I was saying, Chair, is that it is the very same advert that we received, we did last year for the portfolio for the Public Service Commission. Can members see it?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Yes, we can.
Yes, I do believe that members had received this document. So you would assist me, Chair, how you would want me to guide the committee. But the advert is there. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Let the program, Chair.
Okay, good. Thank you. Honourable members, the advert is before us. And of course, as I did indicate, that it's informed by the Act. What does it say? And then the rest of the subcommittee will deal with it. Are we in agreement with the advert, honourable members? Or are there anything that you see that must be covered or taken out without diluting the essence of the act itself?
Chairperson.
Over to you, Honourable Members. Honourable Dr. Schreiber.
Thank you, Chair. If you just allow me, I'm just taking a brief look at the Public Service Commission Act. And there is a reference to the conditions of appointments of commissioners. I don't know if you're also able to see that, but it's Section 6 of the Public Service Commission Act. And you'll see there that there's a specific reference to a commissioner shall not hold office in any political party or political organization. And then there's also a requirement that without the consent of the president, a commissioner may not engage or perform any remunerative work. My request would just be, Chair, whether we can consider including those provisions from the Public Service Commission Act, because we do include the constitutional requirements, which is correct. But since, obviously, this position is also guided by the Public Service Commission Act, I think it would be proper to also include those stipulations, Chair. So I take the view of the committee on that. Thank you.
Okay. So it's more or less a matter of emphasis. Although we take that when the applicants and ourselves looking at Public Service Commission will look at the act holistically. Members, let's take a respond to that. It's just, I think it's about 2.5 lines. It's not much. Honourable members.
Agreed.
Honourable
Chair.
Thank you. Agreed. Let's include that, Marcy. Other than that, are we all happy?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, we are
thank
happy.
You. Thank you, Honourable Members. So, Maskole, make sure that you include that, and before it goes out, you must satisfy yourself that it has been included in your bed.
Yes. It's not that, Chair. What we will do is that we will amend the advert accordingly and then send it to members as a final document. Thank you.
To know what is going to go out.
Yes, so that members can see the full reflection as stipulated now in the meeting.
Good.
Okay. Let me now project the other document.
Chairperson, before we move off this point, if I could just ask you, once the amendment of the advert has been done, will we then elect a committee, a representation from our committee in terms of the interview panels for this position?
Let's deal with that one at the end. Let's finish this one, then we'll come back to that.
Okay, thank you.
We will. Okay, thank you. Marcy, you may continue.
Okay, Marcy? I'm trying to find that other document.
It's the program, ne?
Yes.
Okay. Just while you are still trying to find the document, the members should be aware that in terms of the act as well, it expects us to this committee within 3 months before the end of the existing commissioner, we must advertise and fill that a position or vacancy within that 3 months. So hence we are dealing with this process so that we are also ourselves compliant with the act.
Yes, Honourable Chair.
Marcy?
Yes, I'm here, Chair.
Oh, good.
Can members see the document?
Yes.
Yes, Marcy.
Yes, Marcy.
So basically, through you, Jefferson, these are the dates that we identified in making sure that we process the request through the ATC that we received early July. As it goes, I'm quite sure that members have also had an opportunity to look at the document. I will not go entirely read through all of it point by point, but it would be safe to say that on the 13th of September, the advert will then go out, of course, with the closing date of the 2nd of October, which gives applicants a period of 2 to 3 weeks. We will then subsequently meet as the subcommittee. As you can see there, from the 20th of October, we'll do the shortlisting. subsequently on the 30th, we'll do the interviews. And hopefully by 4th of November, we'll then submit the subcommittee report to the main committee for consideration and adoption, Chair. So that is where things are at this stage. And I'm not sure if Fulas would like to add or Tamu would want to add.
Okay,
Honourable Mr. Mdo, do you want to add something? Yes.
No, Chair, I'm fine.
You are fine, thank you very much. Honourable members, here is are we in agreement with that? If everything goes well, we'll also be according to the dates that have been put here. Let me get a response from the Honourable members.
Honourable Chair, I don't see anything wrong in the program. I think the program is fine. It gives us enough space and enough time. So from my side, I think it's okay. We can accept the program as it is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. Give any second to the acceptance of the program as presented to us.
Chairperson, I would like to second Honourable to be on the program. I think we can take it as it is, as a working document. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And I'm sure Honourable members, all of us, we can leave with this working document as a working program. Thank you very much, Honourable members. Let's come to the last point. For this one, it's up to the Honourable members, if they are ready, different political parties, to give us the names for the members who are going to form part of the subcommittee, just to remind ourselves, and you will confirm it, Masole, that it's four from the ANC and two from the DA and one from small parties, not small parties, but they need to assemble themselves and decide among themselves who's going to represent them. I think I'm omitting something. But just confirm what I say,
Colin. Yes, Chair. Once again, with the assistance of my colleagues, so this one again. Four from the ruling party, who has the majority in parliament, and then three from the opposition party. So in essence, it's going to be one from the DA, one from EFF, and then one from either NFP, or NFT.
Oh yes, I thought as much that there's something that the numbers are not accurate for my dad. So we are suggesting that the ANC will submit the name, the DA will submit the name, the EFF will submit the name, and the IFP and NFT, they will discuss among themselves and then submit formally a name, which doesn't necessarily say that they can attend, but also in terms of the subcommittee is very clear how to establish subcommittees. I will suggest, Honourable Members, that by the end of next week, by Friday, political parties in writing should forward their names to the administration, to my colleagues, as to who are going to be the members of the committee. Are we fine with that suggestion?
I think we are fine with the suggestion, especially now that the small parties are still need to have time where they are going to discuss and agree as to which of them is going to represent them on the committee. So I agree. Numbers and names can be forwarded at a later stage. Thank you.
Yeah. The letter stage is next Friday. Can I hear other Honourable Members their take on this one? Are we all in agreement? Thank you very much. Then next Friday is 11th of 09/2020. So that the administration that they can start working with the logistics of everything. With that, Honourable Members, it brings us then to the end.
Honourable
Stryver, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for the interruption. It's just, unfortunately, the platform. Chair, my question
is about the other vacancy at the PSC. You'll remember that we briefly just discussed this, I think, on the WhatsApp group. And I'd like to just find out what is the committee's plan for that. Now, let me just give the background. That is a vacancy that has now existed for 16 months. There were two votes on it in the National Assembly in November of last year, but the specific candidate was not able to garner the 201 vote majority. So, Chair, just for information of the committee, I've written to the Speaker to just flag also this issue, because it really is not 16 months is a real problem for the Public Service Commission. My own personal view that we should also consider the second candidate that was included in that report for a vote in the National Assembly, but obviously I leave that to the Speaker to make the determination. But in general, Chair, my question is, does the committee have a plan for actually filling that vacancy? Because we're now moving on to a second vacancy, which is correct, but there's still a first one that is frozen, and I don't know what the plan is. Do you have any insights or directions, or can this committee come up with a way forward to propose to the National Assembly that we vote on that as soon as possible, Chair? What are your thoughts? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One second, is that Honorable Tuli? I'll respond to the member that wants to say something. Honorable Tuli. No, Chair, in terms of what Honorable Tuli is saying, the last part of it, I'm not quite sure, because the matter was already with Parliament, whether do we have that power to bring it back to our hands as the portfolio committee, or Parliament is going to take care of it in terms of programming and so on. Thank you, Chair. I was just checking, because it was no longer with our hands. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there any other member want to speak before yes. then I try to summarize this way forward?
Yes, Honorable Chair. Yes. I think
No, can we do this, Honorable Members? Honorable Kivi, is there anyone else who would like to speak on this matter?
Honorable Komani.
Honorable who?
Malumani.
Komani. Okay, yes. And who else?
Malumani.
I don't see that. Sorry?
Malumani.
Okay, Malumani. Okay. So I think that's fine. Honorable
Kibi,
over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I want to agree with Honorable Stone that us as a committee, we did whatever that we were supposed to have done, and the issue was already in the NA. Now it is in the hands of the Speaker. So there is nothing more that we can do, because we followed every process when the issue was still with us as a committee. Right now, it is the Speaker that is going to be dealing with the issue moving forward. I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Koman, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also concur with the latter speaker as well to remind the Honorable Member that on his submission, he just said he wrote to the Speaker of Parliament asking for indulgence in the matter. So we need to await the response from the Speaker of Parliament, and then we should always be cognizant of our jurisdiction in terms of the processes. So we have exhausted our jurisdiction. The matter is now before the National Assembly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Maluma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I'm covered, because the matter is at the NA, so if we can wait and be guided by NA. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks very much, Honorable Members. And I'm sure, Honorable Schreiber, you respect us that we can't also remandate ourselves without following any rules and procedures in Parliament. Let's just leave it by the Speaker, then she will use discretion on the matter. But I appreciate that you raised the matter. And then let's leave it that way, that we'll await the House of
I appreciate what the Speaker is saying. And what I can also just do from my side is to I'll keep the committee then informed as to the response to that letter, because I think it's obviously relevant. So, but I do appreciate. Sorry, Chair.
I
add respect what the members are saying, and what I can do is just keep the committee informed as to the response I received to that letter, because obviously the committee will be want to know what is the answer. So thanks, Chair. Thanks for considering that.
Those are the minutes of the 11th of March. I'll move
any
to another one.
Any recommendation?
No, Chair.
Okay. Okay. The next one?
Okay. I will move. Minutes. Let me just hold on, Chair. Stay with me. I have a minute of 6th of May, Chair.
Uh-huh.
That's during lockdown. These ones are more of a compliance, Chair. That was the period when we were doing annual reports. I'll go to page 1, page 2, page 3. Most of the discussions, Chair, are incorporated in the annual report, Chair.
Okay.
Almost there, Chair. I'm almost. Okay, Chair. Done 6, 3, 2. Here now, a minute of 8, nature, 2020. This is also compliance minutes. I'll go to page 1, page 2. Like I said earlier, Chair, the discussions of these minutes are incorporated, so members can find them in the report. I'll go to another minute. The minutes that I'm going to project now are minutes of the 13th May. Also, these are compliance minutes, Chair. I'll go to page 1, page 2, page 3. Okay, Chair. Let me go to the second last one, Chair. That's the minutes of the 21st May, Chair. 21 May 2020. Page 1, this day we were considering the 5 reports, Chair. As I said, they also got compliance. Page 1, page 2. Okay, Chair. Those are the minutes of the 21 May 2020. I'll go to the last minutes, Chair, for okay. These are the minutes of the 27th May, Chair. 2020, page 1, page 2. This day we are adopting the reports, Chair, all 5 reports. Page 3, page 4, page 5. Those are the minutes, Chair, for consideration adoption today. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Masi. Honorable members, we get the mover and the seconder for the minutes of the 4th of the 4th March 2020. May we get a mover and a seconder?
Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair. What's up here?
I think the network. Let's try and call her again.
Honorable Chair, are you there?
My apology. The fourth month, minute, second, and a mover and a second. Honorable who?
Honorable Chair, can you be assisted here? The first minute, not the minute of March.
It's the 4th of the 4th month 2020 minutes. I need a mover and a second.
Okay, I move for the acceptance of the minutes, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Second? Only a person who was present in the meeting can do that. Unfortunately, I was not caring on that day, but now I can't second. Okay. Next. There is no second, which means the minutes are not adopted, Honorable Member.
I'll second the chair.
Our thanks, Honorable Clerk. The minutes of the 11th of the fourth month, move and a second.
Thank you, Chair. Madam
Leggett. Thank you, ma'am. Second.
Yes. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Member. Any second to join, Honorable Maluleka?
I second, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. The 6th of the 5th month, minutes. If there's no move and a second, I'll move to the next minute.
Honorable Chair, I move for the acceptance of the minutes of the 6th of the 5th month.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Any second? I will move then. If there's no second, which means the minutes are not adopted. The minutes of the 8th of the 5th month.
Honorable Chair.
Honorable. Yeah, Honorable
May, can I suggest that when we are dealing with those minutes, the attendance register must be flagged. Maybe people don't even remember if they were part of those meetings. That's why they are not responding.
But also, we take that the minutes, the members did read the minutes before coming to the meeting, Honorable Kevin. I take your point. But if there's no one, I take your point. But if the member was not there, I would be able to advise the member that you are not present in the meeting.
Okay.
So if they are. Okay. Let's go to the minutes of the 6th month, Honorable Members. Any mover and seconder?
Honorable Chair, I know I was part of that meeting. I therefore move for the acceptance of the minutes.
Any seconder for the minutes of the 8th month? 8th of the 6th month?
I'm seconding the minutes of that day.
Thank you, Honorable Celeste. The minutes of the 13th of the 5th month. The mover and a seconder, please, Honorable Members.
Chairperson.
Honorable Joyce.
I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, ma'am. Any seconder?
Honorable Chair, I second the adoption, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Minutes of the 21st of the 5th month, Honorable Members. Mover. Okay, there is no mover.
Honorable Chair,
yes,
I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 21st of the 5th month to be adopted.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Any second, Honorable Members?
The Bekoto second.
Davesi. The minutes of the 27th of the 5th month, Honorable Members, move by the second, please.
Honorable Chair, I was part of this meeting. I therefore move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, ma'am. Any seconder?
I'm seconding, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Celeste. Let's go back to the minutes of the 6th of the 5th month, Honorable. We had a move. We are looking for the seconder, Honorable Kingi moved. Any seconder for this minute, Honorable Members? Okay, no move, so those minutes are not adopted. Must I note that? But those minutes will stand pending.
Is there any particular reason, if I may ask?
I don't know. They are not. I've asked for the mover. They want the mover. They don't take it. And honorable members, Maskola would like to get a reason for not seconding this minute.
no reason still. Okay, we'll bring them back when we come back from recess, Ms. Pauline. I think we must leave with that for now, which is very odd. With that, honorable members, I just want to raise as closing before we our meeting stands adjourned that it's very dangerous where you sit in a meeting and you don't resolve, you just keep quiet and note everything. So I'm saying that moving forward, you must be very, very mindful that we cannot just be compliance issues in terms of quarterly reports, because they would not, the department would have not necessarily complied with what they promised themselves they are going to do in terms of their predetermined objectives. And also, I'm sure even the AG, all of us were aware, the AG also needs to, he will also assess us in terms of our performance. Where we're not going to say the compliance issue that is just goes like that, without also saying that if this issue in the next quarter, what guarantees do you have and what would have changed? But also, what are we going to do about that? It's very important that we do resolve, we don't just meet for the sake of meeting. It worries me where we just didn't even have the recommendations. I know it's a compliance issue, but there is something that we get that report again that has never been happening, because within the same items that we were discussing earlier this morning, if everything was well, we wouldn't have discussed those issues. If the issue of the open-ended disciplinary hearings in particular on leave and so forth, wouldn't have if everything was well. So I would say probably something that we need to do if we are really committed to make sure that lesser departments appear before government and a better smiling report from the AG, which is most importantly the quality of the work that the department has done, not only the financials as well. So I said that one, honestly, I must raise it, honorable members, that there is something that we need just to communicate probably from our side as well. Having said that, honorable members, let me appreciate all of us who are available for the meeting, and I think we had a very fruitful meeting, and we will make sure that the issues of corruption and the double dipping and so forth come to an end in this term. Thank you very much. Have a blessed afternoon. See you in the afternoon, honorable members. And thank you, Mascole and Julius and Biela and the team and officials from the